The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome back to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. You can find us on Twitter at Bastards_Boston. I'm your host, Charlie Smith, coming to you from Los Angeles, California, by way of Providence, Rhode Island. You can find me on Twitter /X at Smith_MLB. Our other hosts for this episode are Jeremy Schilling, coming to us from Boca Raton, Florida, by way of Centerville, Massachusetts, and Terry Cushman, coming to us all the way from Myrtle Beach in South Carolina by way of Windham, Maine. Jeremy, how are you doing, and where can the fans find you on Twitter?
They can find me on Twitter at JTShill20, and I am medium.
I'll take medium. Terrence, how are you doing? Where can the fans find you?
I'm doing very well. And so is Charlie's audio, which we've had some expert consulting done on. So good to have that. I'm just ready to scorch the podcast with these hot takes we're about to do.
Excellent. Thank you, Terry, for that little shout out. And we'll thank our newest IT guy, Steve, for being the man with the plan. Leading us off with our first hot take, Terry. Why don't you hit us with your first one? I'm just curious to see where you're going.
So it's not really a hot take, but we have to talk about it. So Drew Landry, and let's do a background check on him real quick. He is from Lubbock, Texas. Love Texas. No state income tax in Texas, but also Florida too, right, Jeremy? Yeah, correct.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you for, I didn't even read his hot take. I can't thank him for the hot take until I actually read the damn thing. So he says Rich Hill was a bad acquisition. Now that's not a hot take. Maybe the dumbest Red Sox fans of the fan base might think that that's a hot take, and they are out there and they listen and they dry hump us all day long on Twitter. But, it was a bad acquisition. And when it happened, like, all of my nightmares have come true. Like, when Breslow got hired last year and no moves had been made, all of us went to bed that night thinking, well, at least we're done with the James Paxtons and the Rich Hills. Until, after the trade deadline in 2024. So, it's a terrible move. He's 44 years old. He didn't pitch very well for us when he was 42 years old. And I'm tired of these moves. I hate to bring him up, but you could have got Trevor Bauer for the same amount of money and a lot more wins. You could have. The move was out there. So if you're still clinging to the 1% chance that Trevor Bauer will come to Boston, this move should completely, that's now 0%. And I'm tired of it. I've said on the last show when we were roasting the Luis Garcia pickup, I just want Breslow to show me that he knows how to do it. And this is year five of the Chaim Bloom era, as far as I'm concerned. Why did Bloom even get fired? We know why he got fired, but why did they think he needed to be fired? If we're just gonna keep his playbook and execute the same type of moves, I don't get it. He's not even gonna eat innings for you. He's gonna serve up batting practice with his 74 mile an hour curveball, and we're not gonna be competitive in those games. And Cooper Criswell sucks, but I think there's a lot of potential here for Rich Hill to be just as bad. Why do we have to relive this? It's so dumb, and I'm so tired of it.
The reason we have to relive it is because they failed to go out and acquire players, specifically a left-hand starting pitching. This is only necessary because you've already failed. And you can say the Paxton injury is unlucky, but that was another retread, and he had injury problems prior, and he wasn't blowing anybody away when he was healthy. So this is just an extension of an already pathetic handling of the deadline and in-season acquisitions by the front office, as handicapped by what's turning out to be the absolute worst ownership of a competitive team. Competitive in the neighborhood of competitive. Now, I don't expect him to pitch big innings for the Red Sox because it's going to require an injury. There's no one on the roster right now that should come off in favor of Rich Hill. So Rich Hill is the break glass in case of emergency situation. The fact that we're even in this position is pathetic. And it goes starting from the day Breslow was hired through the season, through the deadline, that this roster has been failed by the front office. And if this is what they think is going to somehow get you into the playoffs, you have to be out of your goddamn mind.
Desperate times call for desperate measures. This is the fourth stint for Rich Hill as a member of the Boston Red Sox. I think one thing we can look forward to is that he and his wife are definitely going to bring fire. I don't think anyone's going to tell his wife where she can and can't sit or what she can and can't do. She very famously got kicked out of I think it was Gillette Stadium for something. I don't remember the exact reason for that, but he hasn't pitched in Boston since 2022. And when he was here, 8-7 record, 26 appearances, gave you 124 innings, 26 starts, did strike out 109 guys. Is he going to be, you know, the Rich Hill of 2022, or is he going to give you the Rich Hill of, you know, 2015 when he was last in Boston? So before that, he's here because of need. There's literally no other reason other than that. And truth be told, you know, if Paxton is still here, Rich Hill's not getting signed. We need bodies who can have the experience in the bigs. And, you know, it's not the sexiest name by any stretch of the imagination. You know, if he wants to be done with baseball, he could be done. But he just threw a 100 pitches in Worcester for a bullpen session. They were talking about that in the fourth game of the Orioles Red Sox series. So they showed it a couple times actually. So they're trying to really highlight this and push that narrative. They asked for Cora's input and he did not give it like a resounding positive. Yes, he's going to automatically be a starter. It's just, he's going to take the time he needs and then we'll bring him up when he's ready. But do you think that Rich Hill's going to stay in AAA? Absolutely not. Rich Hill was an acquisition because we don't have anybody else. That's simply it. Hopefully he's not nearly as bad as some of the other pitchers that we have. And whether it be in a starting role or, you know, opener / long relief role, it can't possibly be worse than some of the other options that we've had so far. Anything else that either one of you gents want to add?
Like I said, this is a nightmare. This whole, how we've navigated the pitching aspect of free agency, the trade deadline. Rich Hill is back in our organization, and I just, when are we going to be good again? When are we going to be smart? When are we going to be a big market team? It's just, I couldn't believe it when Bradford broke the news that he was on the verge of signing. So I'm just in disbelief.
As far as major league pitchers are concerned that have pitched past a certain age, Bartolo Colon pitched until he was 45 with the Rangers. And was he the best pitcher in baseball? No. Was it the prettiest games? No. But, I mean, if he's willing to chew up 100 innings, 250 innings, and he's not going to get injured, he's going to be able to go out there and do his thing. I don't think the Red Sox are in a position to say no. Not right now. So I wouldn't say it's a hot take. It was a bad acquisition. Drew Landry, thank you for the comment. But what would you have done? You know, we got a month and a half left of baseball. It's not pretty. We got limited options. So Jeremy, why don't you hit us with yours?
So City of Champions Collectibles at COC Collectibles tweets, this season is a success, even if the Red Sox miss the playoffs. I mean, he might be right, but it just goes to show you how far we've fallen. So the revenue is generated from, what, 5.5, 6.5 states. They own their own TV station to broadcast the games. They have unlimited resources they've used to buy a Premier League team, a NASCAR team, a hockey team, and now I'm hearing they're going to bid on the Boston Celtics. By the way, please God, Wick Grousebeck, don't let that happen. If finishing above 500 and staying in the race until September is the barometer for a successful season, I'm going to hate being a fan of this team. It's inexcusable that they have finished in last place as many times as they've had in the last 4 or 5 seasons. It's inexcusable that a successful season would be marked a check mark on a season you don't make the playoffs. The whole thing is just completely ridiculous. I'm honestly just frustrated by the fact that this would even be floated, probably supported by, well, definitely supported by ownership, supported by the front office. You know, the fan base is buying into it. Everyone attacks the account every time we talk about what's real and what's not, you know, and all the people that attack our account are going to support this tweet because we've overachieved. We were set up to fail. And yes, we've overachieved, but we're a big market team. We're an international brand. We should be competing year in and year out. I can accept the down year. I can accept a year where you're going in with expectations. You lose your one or two starting pitchers. Devers goes down and you just underachieve. I can accept that. But the fact that this would be considered a successful season is absolutely ridiculous and just goes to show you where we are as an organization. It's pathetic.
We got to hear Jeremy say pathetic. That's one of his favorite words. Terry, any input?
Mine is incompetent when I talk about Breslow. But so I had a tweet on August 15th. So what was that, 4 days ago, something like that, talking about that type of a person that just gave the hot take. This is what my tweet said, and this is on the Bastards account. It's insane how a large faction of Red Sox fans have conditioned themselves to believe that this current product is acceptable. John Henry hires an incompetent executive, sells the fan base poop on a stick. I use the other word, not poop, but I'm, you know, making it Charlie acceptable here. So Henry hires an incompetent executive, sells the fan base poop on a stick, and they line right up. What a world. That's who I'm talking about. what's the guy's handle again? I don't even have it up.
His handle is COC Collectibles. So COC Collectibles.
Yeah. So that's what this is about. So the bar has been set so low and they're conditioned for failure. But when you have some younger, flashy players kind of winning the day at times, that's good enough. That should not be good enough. They should have stud pitchers around them. This team should be mad at the enforcements that Breslow gave them. It's like they're fighting a war and they're like, hey, we need more machine guns. Please get us machine guns. And then the general hands them a bunch of BB guns and says, close enough, go win the war. You can't do it. You need better equipment. You need better enforcements. And it's frustrating. I mean, I say this all the time. We know what a championship team looks like. We've seen it. We know what smart executives do. And that's not what these people do. That's not what Breslow does. And I mean, everybody hated Larry Lucchino. Remember how mad we would get at him? And then we get Sam Kennedy. It gets way worse. It gets way worse.
So for the record, I do want to say that I appreciate the fact that we are one of the few podcasts in sports that actually have a legit swearing policy so that your kids can listen to it. So while it may be negative at times, you don't hear us dropping F-bombs like every other podcast out there, whether it be Red Sox related or other, you know, casts. Anywho, Terrence, credit you for not using poor language. Thank you for staying true to the rule there.
I did say the F bomb. It must have been on the midweek show.
Yeah, I did hear, and I wasn't happy about it.
It was super late, and I apologize.
It was the end of the episode. It was the end of the episode. I heard it.
It was a passionate moment, and I slipped.
We forgive you, Terry. That's your slip of the year. That's a dollar in the swear jar, by the way.
It's like the first F bomb since probably 2018 for me. So
it's been a while. So it was an honest mistake. Here we go. So City of Champions Collectibles, COC Collectibles. The season is a success if the Red Sox miss the playoffs. I wouldn't say the season is so much a success as certain players blossomed and became like success stories. Jaren Duran absolutely played out of his mind in 2024 in relation to 2023. Yoshida has turned it around in 2024. It'd be unfair to not give him the credit that he deserves. Seidon Rafaela, absolutely incredible. The player that I actually think could supplant the missing shoes, just the missing being of Mookie Betts. I think that Seidon Rafaela in a couple of years could be that guy. Maybe you can throw Tanner Houck in there. Maybe you can throw, you know, Cutter Crawford in there for the periods of times that have been absolutely brilliant. I would not call this season, however, a full success because not every single player has done well. Actually, forgot to add Rob Refsnyder. He's also had an incredible tick up in his ability in 2024 as well. If we don't make the playoffs, that shouldn't be seen as a success. Yeah, sure, we did better because certain players did well. But in no way, shape, or form is an 80-win season a success. You know, we need to have a serious talk about the starting rotation here in Boston. It's not acceptable. It's not going to ultimately win us games. It's not going to put us over the edge. And God forbid you lose one or two of those arms. You're in big trouble. We're finding out firsthand what happens when you don't have a starting rotation. You're going to get shelled. You're going to have relievers come out there, give you three innings of work, allow six runs and nine hits. Sorry, but we got to call it like it is. We need to have... I mean, and teams are going to need to have this five or six starters and a long reliever in there in that bullpen, because you're not going to be able to survive. We were overperforming at the beginning of the year, and each player had a moment when they were doing really, really well. We won certain games at the beginning of the year because Tyler O'Neill was hitting home runs at will. He at one point was leading Major League Baseball when he hit his sixth home run of the season. I know, small sample, really early in the season, only had six. But still was one of the better hitters in baseball, had, you know, some of the best numbers. And I thought, you know what, it wouldn't be crazy to see somebody like Tyler O'Neill hit 30 plus home runs. It still looks like he's actually going to do that this year. He's at 23 home runs. So I haven't looked at his numbers. I don't have them directly up in front of me, but he's been advertised for what we're paying. He's been great. So overall, I'm not going to say the season was a success, and thank you for the take. I will say, however, that the season has brought out some positive moments, and I think collectively all of us are happy that we've been able to win as many games. You know, none of us want to sit there and see the team do poorly. You know, we're not sitting there cheering for the Red Sox to get their doors blown off, but we do call it like it is. And when the team is not doing well, we call it like it is. And some people don't like to hear that. So anything else that either one of you gents want to add, Terry or Jeremy? All right. So moving into our third one here, this is coming from Sox at I Miss the 2018 Sox. First off, me too. And I think I can speak on behalf of all of us when we say that we miss when the Sox were competitive and a good team. Sox make the playoffs if Chris Sale trade doesn't happen. Now, I'm going to be a little bit biased on this one because of my, you know, love and affinity for Chris Sale. But I'm going to say this is absolutely true. If Chris Sale is pitching in Boston, you know, of course, not knowing what he was going to do, Chris Sale so far, 14-3, 2.62 ERA, 187 strikeouts. He is getting the triple crown in pitching at 35 years old with the Atlanta Braves. Now, granted, I'm sure having the offense he's had has added some extra benefits there. Chris Sale is going to surpass the number of wins in 2024 that he had in 2019, 2021, 2022, and 2023 as a member of the Boston Red Sox. That's 17 for those keeping score. He's three wins away. I think he's going to do it. Chris Sale also is about to have the lowest ERA he's had as a major league ball player since 2018 when he had a 2.11 ERA, his second best in his career. His 187 strikeouts are the best since 2019. There's very little that people are going to be able to say that's bad about Chris Sale. He's probably going to end the season right around 250 strikeouts, probably around 170 innings. He's always been a guy to blow the doors off when it comes to K9. He's striking out well over one per inning. He's been absolutely phenomenal. He's one of the best pitchers in baseball. He's right up there with Tarik Skubal. And, you know, with Spencer Strider out, he has firmly supplanted himself as the elite one in Atlanta. And if he was pitching here in Boston, we don't go after James Paxton. We do not sign Rich Hill. We probably have, I'm going to say, a minimum of six more wins. And for those that are keeping score, six wins puts us one game out of first place in the AL East. And we are having a very, very different conversation than we are right now. It was an absolute shame that he left. I understand people are going to say no one could have predicted it. You couldn't have predicted it. But Chris Sale, when he is on, is one of the best pitchers in baseball. I've been saying it for years. It was sad to see him go. I'm happy that the change of scenery has been able to provide that kind of response. He is elite. Terrence, why don't you go first?
Honestly, I mean, I liked the trade at the time. With the benefit of hindsight, we lost that trade big time. And if he was on the Red Sox right now, I mean, he's got 14 wins with the Braves. So he'd have tons of run support. Like, the offense hasn't been the problem this year for us. Yeah, we'd be a playoff team. We'd be probably in the first or second wild card right now.
So without looking, not looking at the records, where do you think the Boston Red Sox are in relation to the Atlanta Braves?
It's pretty similar, I think.
They're pretty similar. What would you say? How many games better or worse do you think the Red Sox are?
They went on a rough patch. I mean, we're what, six above? I'd say the Braves are probably seven or eight above.
Jeremy?
That would have been my take.
Okay.
I would have Red said Sox, two games.
Two games. So the Red Sox are 65-58 without Chris Sale. The Atlanta Braves are 66-58 with Chris Sale. So I understand why some people might say it's not a hot take, but holy hell, if we're not a playoff team with Chris Sale's numbers so far in 2024, I'd have something to say about that.
Well, I mean, he's carrying that rotation. I mean, Max
Fried's, without a doubt,
Max Fried's been hurt for part of the year. They don't have Spencer Strider. Last I checked, Austin Riley wasn't having a great year. I'm sure he'll get back to form eventually. They haven't had Acuna since April or May. So it's just been a perfect storm for Atlanta, but he's carried them, and credit to him. And I just feel like he'd be so much more well supported on this Red Sox staff right now.
And maybe we would have, you know, broken him again. Who knows? You know, this is outside looking in here. But has there ever been a player to win the Comeback Player of the Year and an MVP or a Cy Young award in the same season? Because if there has been, I don't know of one.
I wouldn't
and
know.
Chris Sale could very well be that first one to potentially win Cy Young, Comeback Player of the Year. I do not think he's going to win the MVP award, not when there's a player who's about to have 50 home runs and 50 stolen bases. But that's the way that the cookie's crumbling. You know, if he ends up winning, he's winning Comeback Player of the Year. There's just no way he's not. And I think if he can get 230 to 240 strikeouts and get 16, 17 wins, I'd be shocked if he doesn't get the National League Cy Young Award. Jeremy, anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, I mean, I don't call this a hot take. I call it an accurate take. We had a few of those in tonight's submission. And the only thing I'd say, and I know you already mentioned it, but no one predicted this. This was impossible to predict. His season, his career was over. The contract was an eyesore. There was no basis to sign him at the time they did based on performance. With that said, if ownership was committed and didn't mind spending and didn't mind, you know, being at or near the threshold, you keep him and you roll the dice and we get the benefit. Instead, the Braves get the benefit. It's unfortunate.
I think to say that they only got the benefit, sorry, Terry, to cut you off. I think to just say that they got the benefit would be a little bit unfair. They absolutely hosed us in this deal. And they knew what they had. There was some word and speculation that the Braves did not really have any faith in Vaughn Grissom. And I still want to give the kid a chance here. But the fact of the matter is, I mean, there is in no way, shape, or form anybody on the planet that could say that this was even remotely close to a fair deal. You know, the Braves let up on a guy. They didn't have space for him. There was no need for him. We're happy to get rid of him. And not only did they get an elite pitcher, they got another team to pay half his salary. That's how smart that front office is.
And that's another reason why I'm just so pessimistic with Breslow. Like, when he calls Alex Anthopoulos, he's a major underdog in whatever that negotiation is about to be. I mean, Anthopoulos has done dozens, if not hundreds, of trades and various transactions. And Breslow was never even a number two or a number three. Like, he was never on the call listening in previously. He was strictly a pitching analytics guy in Chicago, and that's it. And like you said, Charlie, the mere fact that the Red Sox had to pay $17 million of his salary is just insane. How many people are making more than that right now on the actual Red Sox? Raffy Devers, Masataki Yoshida, and I think Lucas Giolito. And Giolito's just barely over that at 19. I think that's it. Chris Sale's your third or fourth highest financial commitment of the season. And we say all winter long, you know, we complain about the moves they didn't make, but you can argue it's one of the moves that they did make that essentially contributed us to falling short. It's just insane. Having said that, though, I was as pessimistic as anyone. And I figured best case for Chris Sale, you'll have 3 good months. You'll have 2 injured ones. And then an ugly month where he gives up that 6 or 7 spot to the Orioles.
And Chris Sale this year has had arguably one of the best years of his career. But to your point, I mean, how many games has Chris Sale missed this year? Maybe one, if that. I don't know if he's missed a game all year.
I mean, I think the best year of his career was 2017. You know, 214 innings, 308 strikeouts. I don't know how many times you're going to see a pitcher exceed 300 anymore. A 12.9 strikeout per nine. He's at 12 this year, a 12 even strikeout per nine. But right. The league is just pitchers can't stay healthy anymore. So, and then in 2017, wasn't that Kluber that beat him out right at the very end?
I don't remember. I can't remember, but yeah, I mean.
Or it was Blake Snell. It was Kluber, and then Snell was the year later. So it was Kluber. And so it's, I'm just saying how insane it used to be compared to it is now.
I mean, here's the thing. You list off the pitchers that can strike out 300 guys in a year now. Tarik Skubal probably could do it. Garrett Crochet probably could do it. I think there was hope that Yamamoto in LA or Imanaga could potentially do 300, although I don't think that's ever going to happen. Chris Sale, I don't think is going to have 300. That he'd have to pitch out of his mind, and he'd have to have close to 18 strikeouts a game for the next, you know, eight starts. It'd be insane. It's not going to happen. But I think it's not completely ridiculous to assume that maybe he hits 250. I mean, yeah, 230, 240 would still be insane. But if he hits 250, that'll be the third highest in his career behind the 308 in Boston and 274 in Chicago that he had in 2015, 2 years before he joined the Sox. So he's just going to keep doing what he's doing.
We don't get to see a lot of Chris Sale starts. I know I don't go out of my way to watch Braves games, but I would imagine he's probably a little bit smarter. He's probably not the psychopath that he was in Boston. Eventually, you got to be smarter. You got to take care of yourself. You have to listen to your body. And I bet the Braves have the much smarter version of Chris Sale, and that's probably at least a small part of why he's pitching so well.
I'm happy for him. I'm happy he's excelling, and I'll cheer him every single time. I will wear a Chris Sale jersey proudly as a Red Sox fan. Anything else that you gents want to add? Excellent. That is going to do it for the Bastards. Everyone have a great one. Take care.